That song was Stranger on the Shore by Pete Fountain, one of my grandparents' favorites. Welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. My name is Ryan, and I am an AmeriCorps member serving in the role of Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for the organization Umpqua Watersheds. In this episode of Living Downstream, you'll hear reflections from Laleen Fifield, who talks about the importance of maintaining connections, being active, and finding ways to support environmental and other organizations as you age. Before jumping into the interview, we'll take a moment to pause for a land acknowledgement, to remember that prior to European settlement, indigenous groups tended the land and waters of this region and were often forcibly removed against their will. Some of the groups who once occupied the land within the Umpqua watershed include Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Malala, and others. Actually, in addition to our weekly land acknowledgement, we would love to incorporate indigenous perspectives about what it means to live downstream, or to live in such a way that those downstream are impacted less negatively. If you have knowledge to share on this topic, or would like to talk about current experiences of what it means to care for the environment now that ownership has become the way of the land, please reach out via email to ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. In celebration of LGBTQ Pride Month, we're exploring ways that people from diverse backgrounds intersect with and promote conservation of the environment. Our next guest on the show is Laleen Fifield, who will share her perspective on the ways that local churches can take up the call to action in protecting the natural world. Welcome to Living Downstream, Laleen. Many people likely wouldn't make the connection between churches or other religious institutions and environmental protection. What would you say is the role of religious groups in protecting the environment?
Oh, nothing like starting off with a really challenging question. I'm not quite sure how to answer that because I'm not sure that most religions actually have an aspect to the religion that includes environmental protections. I think the focus of religions differs greatly. For example, if we looked at churches in our area, we have one that hosts Saturday market, the best, you know, food that you could possibly buy. And then we have others that probably serve the most processed food imaginable, you know, during the seniors' luncheons. So I think that the best answer to that is that we ought to be very engaged. And I think that that engagement often comes as a result of what the solid core of the religious organization did in their youth. And the reason why I say that is because in Roseburg and most other small towns and even larger communities, what we hear over and over again is our churches are dying out. Young people don't go to church anymore. It's nothing but a church of elders. They're all seniors. We had some young people walk into our church not knowing much about us and think, you know, this is going to be really, really dull. And then they get to know us, you know, they sort of get to know our credentials, you know, what each of us did in our younger years, and often are extremely surprised. And even what we do currently, I think, you know, probably the best example of perhaps not a direct environment issue, but of churches just stepping up is at the beginning of the virus. I mean, the word went out, we need masks. And every elder, senior person in church was busy sewing masks. And, you know, before you knew it, we had everyone in Roseburg running around in these amazingly different colored, different styled, you know, masks. And so I think that that's just one example of when one is touched, when one is committed to a thing, you know, that we can really do that. I know in our congregation, and I'm speaking now of what we call UUUC, it's the Umpqua Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Unitarians have a long, long history of environmental interaction, action, strong statements. And it really comes from what we would consider the core of our religious philosophy. In fact, let me actually read our seventh principle. We have seven principles we live by. And the seventh one is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So when we're younger, it's not unusual to see us taking a highway for cleanup, showing up at river cleanup, you know, showing up wherever, breaking trails, cleaning trails, clearing trails. And as we get older, our interests continue in things that are important to us, to our living, to our environment, i.e. to our living. And so I think what ends up happening is we tailor activities that are perhaps a little more age appropriate. For example, when Umpqua Watersheds does its yearly auction, which it will do again, so many seniors show up with these wonderful basket donations, you know, as a way of, you know, contributing a kind of support. And we've got a lot of environmentalists, we've got artists, certainly as a part of our congregation. Love to name them and mention them, but I probably should not do that. But just let me tell you, we have a lot of really fascinating, interesting people whose lives didn't just stop at retirement, but sort of continued on. Another way I would answer that is we do a lot of community service in varying ways. We do things like open up our facility, our building, to activities that are of interest to the environment. Right before we closed down because of the virus, we were scheduled to show Gorilla Girl. And it's going to come back as soon as we can open up. But we've always housed presentations from Umpqua Watersheds and other environmental groups in our congregation, invited the community. We do and support films. We bring in artists and entertainers. We have a lot of gallery showings of environmental artists. Our show changes depending on activity, once a month or once every 2 or 3 months, and we'll have a featured artist. And folks are welcome to, you know, come in and browse. We have a library that is full of environmental books. And we serve probably the best lunches in town after Sunday service. Really healthy, well-balanced. If you're plant-based, you'll find enough to eat. And if you want to have meat, that'll be there too. What else can I tell you? Oh, all kinds of good things. For example, there are very few places and ways to recycle in Roseburg, and things they don't even take. And the older you get, the more challenging it gets. So we bought big recycle bins, and we say, come to church on Sunday and bring your recycle, and then we'll take care of it. And we're committed to never using throwaway products. So if you want something to drink, you're going to get a glass or a ceramic cup or a real plate, real knives and forks, and you're going to be served out of real bowls. We don't ever use paper products except for the essentials. And everything like that that we do is a way of saving the tree, or, you know, showing honor for what really matters and respect. So those would be a few of the things.
Yeah, it sounds like a great variety of activities and ideas. So if anyone's listening, whether from a religious group or not, I love that commitment to not using the single use items. That's something that I have been trying to encourage various organizations. I mean, Umpqua Watersheds is already very environmentally committed, but other organizations of which I've been a part, just let's just say we're not going to use them, right? Like, let's just not use them. We can use, like you said, reusable plates and wash them after or something. But yeah, knowingly using single use is, to me, seems like an outdated thing if we're trying to protect the planet that we all share. So
it is. It's even been hard for us to have masks, you know, that are disposable, available as you enter the building. But it's interesting, most people bring their own and they have washable masks and they aren't using disposables. So we try, I guess you could say, in every way that we can to live differently, to recognize that we don't need to live in a disposable environment, and probably some of the better made things are the older things anyway. I mean, my gosh, some of our dishes probably were donated by members 50 years ago. So anyway, I'm 79 and a half. I'm going to be 80. And a lot of our members are older. And one of the things that I love so much about our senior community is that we're not closed down to new things. Like, you know, we right away, we missed one Sunday service and then we were live, and nobody had ever done Zoom before, and nobody had the cameras and the sound equipment, you know, and the technology, but we got up and we were ready. And by the second Sunday and ever since then, we have not only recorded every service and they are available on YouTube, but also discussions after the services, which kept our community members engaged and interacting with each other. And then we tried to do our whole adult enrichment series, which we do every year during the winter months. And that was challenging, challenging to get some of us to learn how to use Zoom. But the favorite of all the activities was people just wanted to talk. And they had the most interesting conversations about all kinds of things. Like, where were the best places to walk in the woods and not have to wear a mask? Coming from people between age 70 and 90, it was great. It was wonderful. My partner and I, she's 85, we have a routine where we walk about 2 miles, and I would say 85% of the time, we don't see anyone on the entire walk except across Harvard Avenue. The rest of the time, we might have a car pass us, once in a while, somebody else walking. But it's just been absolutely amazing. If you really look, you can find great places in town to be a part of the environment and to breathe healthy air and have a good walk.
Yeah, I was wondering what ideas you have for people, because you've mentioned a couple of times, whether it's churches or other types of religious organizations, tend to have an aging population or a group that is getting up there in age, even if they're trying to, you know, bring in younger people as well and families. Like, what are some ways that you would recommend? You mentioned walking for older people. And I'm not going to say old people because you're not old, but like older people than myself, for example. I'm 32. And people who just maybe might not be able to do as strenuous of an activity as like a river cleanup. Like, we had a river cleanup recently, and some of the people, you know, they're trying to pick up these heavy items that are like, you know, buried in part of the, you know, riverbank or something like that might not be feasible for everyone. So what are some things that maybe if people are not as active, but want to keep doing something to help the environment, what can people do?
Well, I always encourage people to try to do something close to their heart so that as they're doing it, they're going to be enjoying what it is that they do. So I'll just tell you about a few things that we do kind of as an organized event through the Unitarian Church. We have supported fish, for example, forever and ever. And we always have at least one person on the fish board. We take a collection, you know, whether it's $5 or whatever one can afford every Sunday that goes directly to fish. And people continually take their gardens. Are you all growing gardens out there? Surplus gardens should go to the fish food pantry so that people can eat healthy food, stay healthy, go out and walk more and enjoy their lives more. So we do things like that. When I no longer was feeling as stable doing river cleanup or some of those activities, I would volunteer like to make snacks and food, to serve at an information table, to check people in, you know, those kinds of activities, and still be there, be out there, to be a part of. I already mentioned those wonderful baskets that you can make and donate, and the other great things that you have around your house that have value. And remember, as a senior, you ought to be thinning out. So every opportunity for an auction is a perfect time to donate those things that you've never used, that have been in the cupboard, that you ought to use, and maybe you don't even know what they are. Like my granddaughter gave me a bullet. I had no idea what a bullet was. I started to donate my bullet until I found out what a great appliance it was. But anyway, I know that we all have all kinds of things that are available to donate. You can work in the office of an organization that you love. And people who have been active in environmental causes can teach classes. We have a couple people who go into the schools in varying kinds of ways and teach kids at the grade school level. One of our members teaches clowning, and she actually goes into several of the grade schools as a clown, teaching clowning. And while she's doing it, you know, she's teaching other kinds of things that are really important, like not starting fires and playing with matches, you know, that sort of thing. So again, I think it's really a matter of, you know, what one's interests are. I love music. So when I know that there's a band or a comedian or somebody coming through that I think people would be interested in, you know, we try to offer up our space and make it known to the community. But volunteering in ways that are appropriate to one's age, I'd say would be the best. Yeah, let me say this very clearly. It helps one feel less old, less fragile, less vulnerable, more active, more self-assured and confident. When you're doing things that you like, things that you love, it's good for the environment, it's good for the community, it's good for you, and you're having a good time doing it. So, you know, if you want to sit around, do that in the evening. During the day, you know, it's much better to be out in the world.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I've heard of so many people who, you know, once they retire, if they don't have something to do, they tend to go downhill faster, right? You like tend to have more health problems and that kind of thing. But if you stay active in different ways, like you said, with things that you enjoy, helping in ways that you can, you know, maybe you're not doing the river cleanup, but you can do other things like sitting at a table. I know that Umpqua Watersheds is going to be having a table at the farmer's market. I know a lot of organizations, I think they have at the Umpqua Valley Farmer's Market, for example, I think they always reserve one table for a nonprofit. So there's usually nonprofits there. So potentially, you know, people could help out with that. You mentioned the auction. We have a volunteer training coming up soon, actually. And it includes a lot of different ways that people can get involved. So yeah, there are some that are more physical, you know, going out into the wilderness, assessing some land that might be slated to cut down the trees. But then there are the, you know, this radio show editing. So it is maybe more technical, but it also is something people could do at home. So definitely like two very different interests. There's outreach, marketing, like word of mouth, even like letting people know about events. So yeah, there's so many different ways that people can get involved. And yeah, it can tie into your interests. Oh, and you also mentioned about, you know, liking music. Like we're trying to incorporate more music on Living Downstream, the radio program. But music mm-hmm. is a way, if people, you know, sing or play an instrument or something, that's welcomed at a lot of organizations, not just ours, but yeah, a lot of organizations as a way of like either like spicing up an event or yeah, sharing awareness by writing songs about different things, whether it's environmental or otherwise.
We'll be right back after a few brief announcements. Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard on our radio program. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing a positive change they'd make in their community if given the power to do so. Entries could be in the form of essays, stories, raps, songs, you name it. Please send submissions to our AmeriCorps member at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org with youth entry making positive change in the subject line. Teachers and parents, reach out if you'd like to learn more. And now back to Living Downstream, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds.
Well, since you've mentioned that, one of the things that we have been doing at the Unitarian Congregation during this period when we've been shut down, and I do mean shut down, there are about five of us in total who do the Sunday services and have been inside, plus our office administrator and occasionally board members, but one of the things that we've done is totally improve our audiovisual, our stage area, our lighting, our sound systems, etc., with the idea in mind that we really do want to have more of a performance space available for things like open mic, for all kinds of presentations. In addition to music, we started that right before our shutdown. Before that, we were doing mostly three kinds of musical events. There were the Sunday afternoon, stay after church, appropriate music, mostly for, you know, seniors, but not quite the kind of music that's going to go into like one of the retirement centers where everybody's, you know, sitting in a wheelchair, but Sunday afternoon music. And then we were doing Friday, Saturday night shows, or occasionally Sunday shows. And we want to bring in more of that because we have a wonderful little building, and we really want to see more community use. So we've made some decisions about volunteering the space, renting out the space, and varying kinds of ways that we could share it. It's completely wheelchair accessible now. It's got a great kitchen. So we're pretty excited about that. So we plan to open up in the next month or two, and you'll probably be hearing more from us at that point. But we are excited about it. I wanted to talk to you. We talked earlier before the show about blue zones. We had talked about blue zones, and you had asked me how blue zones and churches affiliated. I think I mentioned that we were a blue zones faith-based approved community, and I realized I hadn't thought a whole lot about that since we talked. But it was really an amazing, exciting process. And we were the first congregation or church to be certified. And we went through all kinds of steps to do that. And we're pretty proud of ourselves for having achieved that. But let me tell you what I think Blue Zones has brought to Roseburg, and then what I feel it brought to us as a faith-based community. We were picked, this county, from a list of runner-ups that wouldn't shine or get a star on anybody's list as a county in serious need. Poor education levels, obesity, a lot of cigarette smoking, earlier aged illnesses, and often resulting in deaths, whether it's, you know, heart stuff or lung stuff or whatever. And poor eating for living in this amazing growing, gardening kind of community. And so we were picked nationally as a community to try this program out. And I first heard about it and ended up with one of its coordinators living across the street from me, but that was long after I'd gotten involved. But I just went to one of their purpose workshops to see what they were all about and was impressed and amazed by, you know, what was said. And so I started pursuing it as something that seemed really viable and significant as an addition to our community. And what to me was so amazing about it was somebody actually was going around judging, rating churches, businesses, restaurants, organizations on their, you know, acceptability. You know, are you good to the environment? Are you nice to other people? You know, are you kind? Are you compassionate? Are you respectful? And what do you do to make the world better? So I thought that was pretty cool. And as I got to talking with one of the project organizers here in Douglas County, I found out that there was a faith-based opponent, and there was one other church that was interested, but no one really had gotten into it. So I asked if they would send the materials, because I said I thought we had a congregation that, you know, could meet that. Well, I got a packet. I mean, I got a packet. I got 34 questions that needed to be answered. Either we were currently doing it, we were planning to do it, we intended to complete it. And I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, simple little questions, but things that really made you think about, you know, how your organization, or in our case, you know, how our congregation functioned. And the first thing I realized was, well, we already don't use disposable materials, one use service, you know, we can check that one off. And so I started going through some of the other things on the list, and I realized that our beliefs as a congregation were really a good match for joining with and supporting and being supported by. And so I talked a bunch of our members into going to one of those purpose groups, and they enjoyed it. And then some people got involved in the walking groups, and we started a church walking group. And then we ended up with four or five of our members in the same assisted living facility. And we went over there and they, you know, started having a meeting and having a little walking group. And little by little, we, you know, started realizing that this was something worth doing. So anyway, I grabbed those questions when I was thinking about us talking, because I wanted to see, you know, what is it about, you know, the environment? What is it about the larger community that made getting certified so attractive to us? And even though the questions were many, I think the best way I could sum it up is that it was so consistent with our values as a congregation in terms of making our environment the best possible environment inside and out, whether it meant planting more flowers or adding a couple trees, you know, around us, did we really have to blacktop everything to park a car, especially if those cars maybe were only parking on this beautiful grassy tree area for an hour and a half on Sunday? No, we don't have to blacktop that, you know, and we'd much rather water those trees, you know. We just started looking at all kinds of things that would help us enhance what we were already doing, including, you know, what we feed ourselves. And we had a congregant who really got excited about that and took major responsibility for planning Sunday menus. And so that went really well. So anyway, being a faith-based organization has nothing to do with your religious beliefs. It has everything to do with how you live with each other, how you live with yourself, how you encourage your congregation to stay healthy and strong, to be out in the world, to walk, you know, to have friends, to do activities that are good for you, and to stay healthy. So we thought that was a pretty good deal. And we were very proud. In 2019, which was at this point over 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, to be the first church.
So Blue Zones, for any listeners that don't know, and for myself, so the Blue Zones are like where people are living the longest in the world or something? Is that how they define those?
Yes, they studied three communities in the world where people live the longest and live the healthiest. And they looked at what they ate, and they looked at their activities, and they looked at their social lives, including how much TV they watched or had no TV at all, and tried to identify the supports that led to a long life. And of course, the most obvious is they ate very little processed food, if any. Mostly plant-based, but not entirely, but very, very healthy. And they were physically active, usually from a very early age, well through their senior years, you know. I thought about my mother, and my mom lived to be 90, and the morning that she died, she was reading the LA Times. And an hour later, you know, she just sort of let go. But up until that time, even when she was in retirement, she walked every day. I mean, if she didn't get her at least 30-minute walk, you know, as she got older, her day, you know, wasn't complete. And I don't ever remember her eating, you know, processed food. Maybe in her more senior years, she might have eaten something frozen. But so I'm going to be 80 this year, and I'm planning on hitting 90, maybe 100. And my partner's 85. So it's real doable, and it's doable having an active life. The other part of Blue Zones, of course, that was of interest to us was how people treated each other in these areas of the world where they lived so long, and they really lived as community. And I think that, you know, we could say that sort of exists here in Roseburg, but certainly not in a way that couldn't be improved upon. For example, within the church community, we live in churches. We don't live in a unified church community. And I would like to see us all engaged in non-political, non-opinionated kinds of ways, and things that are good for all of us, good for the planet, good for our home. And I think we can do that.
Would you like to volunteer with UMCA Watersheds? We'll be holding a virtual volunteer training via Zoom Saturday, June 19th from 9 to 11 a.m. Attendees will learn about a variety of new ways to get involved with our organization, roles suitable for multiple ages and ability levels. If you'd like to learn more or sign up to attend, email our AmeriCorps member at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Mark your calendars for our volunteer training June 19th.
And now for the rest of Lillian Fifield's interview.
It's neat that your church got involved with and certified by the Blue Zones. Two or three of the other AmeriCorps members are currently serving in roles with Blue Zones Project Umpqua. And I'm doing one of their purpose workshops, and I'm pretty excited about it. You mentioned doing that, so I have high hopes.
It'll be interesting, especially if it's a good mix of people. We tried to mix ours up with, I think the youngest person was in their late 20s, 40s, 60s, and then me and one other older person. And it was interesting for those reasons. I just can't stress enough how much I feel that seniors have to contribute when we can find, you know, the things that are most exciting for us. Earlier this week and over the weekend, I participated in a Zoom get-together of all of the early movers and shakers in women's music. We're talking about people like Holly Near. But these were groups of us who, back in the 70s, said, I don't want to listen to beat me, kick me, abuse me, and I'll love you anyway kind of music anymore. And we started, I don't know, hearing from artists who felt the same, women who were writing their own music and writing lyrics about our lives. And so this group, we were all gray hairs. I mean, we were the women who were producing concerts. I was producing concerts in the early 70s. We were the women who started record distribution, now CD distribution companies, started booking agencies, started the Michigan Women's Music Festival that had 20,000 women in attendance the last year that it was open. I mean, there were some artists there. There were booking agents. I have met or worked with so many of these women, and look at us. I mean, you know, I'm doing this in my 30s. Some of them started in their 20s, but we're all sitting around on Zoom talking about what we were doing in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And it was amazing. But again, it's, you know, it's testimony to people finding ways in their senior years to continue on doing the things that they love. And that's important, because when you retire, you know, you got all the options imaginable in front of you and all the choices. And I think people who choose well for themselves, whatever that might mean for them, you know, are going to end up having the best retirements, feeling the most comfortable, the happiest, healthiest, most sociable, least depressed, least overeating, more active. At least I wish that for all of my senior companions.
We need all of you, right? So if we think about the inclusion of, you know, all different types of people, whether it's people from like religious, non-religious backgrounds, people from the LGBT community, straight, you know, all types of families, people of different races, ages, like you've mentioned. I've had a number of people of adult ages and older people on the radio show, and we're starting to actually include youths on the radio too. But just thinking about all the ways we can be so beautifully different and trying to bring those perspectives together. And yeah, if we think about like grandmothers, or like grandmotherly people or grandmotherly aged people. I've been reading a lot about grandmothers in terms of humans and like in the forest, that kind of thing. And similarly with grandmothers in communities, whether it's different cultures than ours or even here, we learn a lot. I learned a ton from my grandmother. I spent so much time with her growing up, and I feel like I learned some of my first interactions and my introduction to being really conscious of recycling and reusing was from grandma, because my grandma and grandpa would always, like, you know, they'd take the envelope that they got in the mail and they use that as their grocery list. And then they would rinse off their aluminum foil and reuse it, you know? So just really thinking about our impact on the environment and others Yeah, but thinking about the involvement of people with different perspectives, there's so much creativity that we can bring to the table. So it's like, even though I'm from a different part of the country, you know, I'm very enthusiastic and I have tons of ideas and maybe different ideas than people were doing here before. And with the trees, like going back to the forest thing, grandmothers and like what they call mother trees in the forest pass information and different nutrients and things to the younger trees. So there's a lot of research being done and just, I mean, stories that have gone on in human and non-human cultures and societies about, yeah, like the passing of information down from one generation to the next. So there's so much that I and people younger than myself can learn from people older than myself who have maybe lived through things that I haven't or experienced things that I haven't. And certainly the environmental movement, if we're going to get, you know, make any headway on huge, complicated things like climate change and trying to stop species extinctions, we need to bring everyone together from all different backgrounds.
You are so right. And you know, we can do that if we can just, you know, get past things that we look at that we think make us different from each other. You know, because, I mean, when I think of looking, you know, at the environment and what that means to me, I think of do no harm, just do no harm. And just, you know, have respect for all existence. Like right now in my backyard, and I am about, oh, if you were standing on the Stuart Parkway Bridge looking downriver, you could see my backyard, okay? In my backyard right now are two deer. She is gonna have that fawn within the next couple of days. And he is just sort of standing guard. And they're under the tree closest to the house in the shade, just lolling away the afternoon. They've been out there for a couple hours. I have a deer family here and they have been here for the entire, well, it took me 2 years, first 2 years, 8 years, the last 8 years. They come back every year and they have their babies. There's eight total right now, including male and female. And they meet here, you know, by the river and mate, and they kind of go off and then they come back and they're pregnant and they have babies. And I live in town, you know, and what's different about this place? Well, we're on the end of a dead end street. Not a bunch of traffic. People drive slowly because there are some children. All the children are respectful of animals. So if they see some deer walking down the street, they're not going to chase the deer. When they see them in our yard, they just watch and observe. And nobody's ever been hurt here. And if we could make our city, our community that way, you know, where you don't burn things, you don't endanger things, you don't start fires that aren't safe, you know, you bury your fire if you make one, you don't burn things out of fire season, you know, you don't hurt animals. If we just all could get past all of our differences and just look at that, you know, do no harm anywhere, we could radically change this environment and it could grow. It would grow. It'll pass itself down the I-5, up the I-5. And we have opportunities. We have lots of people in our community now who've been made homeless in the worst possible time that ever could be. And, you know, how have we reached out? Have we lowered rents in order for them to have a place to live? Or because there's a housing shortage, did we raise rents? That's a question that all of us who have rentals need to ask ourselves. How long have you frozen your rents for? Because there's an upsurge in property values, are you going to sell high so that you've now sold a house that 15 years from now, when the bottom drops out of the real estate market, whoever you sold that house to is going to have a mortgage that's bigger than the value of their property? It's like living with trees. I mean, you just have to be conscious of each other and what we do and how we do it and what our goal is. And having grandmothers that have goals that are as positive as can be, you know, is a real important thing. I loved hearing that you had that kind of grandmother.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot of what you were talking about now reminds me of like why I named this show Living Downstream, because it's, you know, kind of multifaceted, but, you know, in terms of water, you know, what are we doing upstream that's going to impact people later on downstream, but just living downstream in society, you know, what we do today impacts generations down the line. What we do, like even, you know, some of the smoke from our area reached, I think, Europe because of the way that the winds traveled. So not that like all of that is human caused, but some of it is. And some of the things we do in terms of pollution certainly is reaching other people, whether we're spraying pesticides and herbicides and putting other toxins in the ground, whether we're clear cutting a forest. And then now there's going to be a lot of erosion and sediment going into the stream and potentially additional chemicals. So yeah, we need to think about, like you said, like, what are our goals? What is our intention? And how are we going to accomplish that? And if possible, can we take care of other people in the process, not just have it be, you know, a profit-oriented mindset? Or how can I get ahead when potentially make other people fall behind?
It all matters. I never had any kind of a church affiliation growing up. In fact, I didn't even join a religious organization until I moved to Roseburg the second time and became a Unitarian. But the reason why I joined and became a member of the Unitarian Church was that the principles that we agreed to were consistent, you know, with my own. And I think too often, you know, we get caught up in any kind of setting, religion or otherwise, where we're not really comfortable with most of what's going on or even some of what's going on, but we don't speak up and speak out. You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, how can we all live together? Our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That's what you live by, period. Are you going to buy an electric car or are you going to continue burning fossil fuel, you know? Would you wear a mask to protect someone else? Or would you not wear a mask because you don't want to? For me, you know, those principles were things I could live by. And I think that that's really, you know, what all of us need to do with our lives, regardless of our age. You know, what matters to you? Who matters? How does what matter? Does breathing matter? And what will you do to ensure that whatever you are doing makes a difference in what matters? I just said that sounded kind of preachy. Sorry about that.
But I was thinking back to your idea about community, and it's so important to have that sense of community. So whether you join a religious group or whether you join an environmental group or whether you join a workout group, like having a group that you get along with, that you agree with, or even if you don't agree with, but can disagree kindly, but that you can do things with together, you know, like you mentioned walking, but gardening or helping, you know, clean the river or, just coming together for a common cause or doing things together. That's so important. So figuring out, like you said, what your values are, what you want to do, like what you want your role to be in the world, how you want to help, and then start doing it and find other people that are also have that same vision or share, you know, some of those same values and join forces.
You got it. That's truly what it is all about. It's creating community in every arena, which includes the forest. You know, it's like you don't bring a species, a plant into a forest that's going to be destructive. So you don't want to bring a person in that's going to be destructive. You want to help that person not. This has been real interesting. I hope you have enough to help folks find a way to continue to be supportive of Umpqua Watersheds and other environmental organizations as they grow older. I do know if you come to our congregation at any point, you'd recognize a lot of faces.
Yeah, it's important to remember that we can stay active even if maybe not as physically active, whereas doing things that are as physically taxing, just, yeah, there are so many ways to get involved. And I've seen that over and over again in so many, like, play out in so many ways with Umpqua Watershed specifically, that, yeah, it's not just doing really strenuous work, right? There's all sorts of ins to the organization to help out. So if people care about the environment, there are lots of ways to do that, to support our efforts and other organizations' efforts. Like you mentioned about gardening too, just going back to that. I used to volunteer at a garden that supplied food to the community lunch program. And just, yeah, like access to either free or low cost healthy food is so important. And people who have a lot of money might not think, oh, right, poorer people also need healthy food, you know, busy buying their own food maybe. And like, okay, I'm going to buy organic. And then maybe they donate, but Are you donating crap or are you donating real fresh, healthy produce? Like, there is a difference, and we should be giving everyone dignity and respect, and everyone deserves to be able to be healthy, to have a long life, to try to achieve their goals and dreams and to contribute to making the world a better place.
You just said it all. If we treat the forest the same way, we're going to live in a really beautiful place for a long time. This would be a good time for you to tell everybody how to get involved in Umpqua Watersheds.
That's true. Anyone who wants to get involved with Umpqua Watersheds can certainly reach out to me. My email is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, at Umpqua Watersheds with an S on the end, .org. And if people are listening, they probably know that it's on KQUA, or they might have found it through Umpqua Watersheds. So the website is another good way to check out what we're doing. And we're updating it all the time. We just added an educator resources page. And so we have videos of the number of the workshops that we did during our teacher training back in March. I've been updating and adding curriculum, activities and lessons for the classroom. I've also been meeting with teachers and brainstorming ideas to incorporate more nature, STEM or STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, sometimes art and math, nature journaling, just all different things like that. So plenty of ways to get involved with our organization. But thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Umpqua Watersheds is now offering opportunities for youths to have their voices heard, literally, on our radio program, Living Downstream. Kids ages 8 to 18 are invited to submit a 1 to 3 minute audio recording describing what they love about the place in which they live. These could be poems, essays, stories, or songs. We welcome their creativity. Submissions should be sent to our Environmental Education and Outreach Leader at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. with youth entry, sense of place, in the subject line. This is a great opportunity for families and classes alike.